Okay, so let's get right into the Sicha. The Rebbe is asking, basically, why does Miriam's Yahrzeit cancel out the celebration of Shabbos HaGadol? So first of all, what I noticed is the Rebbe makes a strong point, quoting the Alter Rebbe, that it's called Shabbos HaGadol because of a Nes Gadol that happened on that Shabbos. The other poskim, they all say Nes, not Nes Gadol. So it seems like there are two ways of teaching Shabbos HaGadol. Either the word Gadol goes on Shabbos, or it goes on the Nes that happened on that Shabbos. So most Mefarshim say, or most Poskim say, that it's Shabbos HaGadol because a Nes happened. So Shabbos is always Shabbos, and in addition, there was a Nes. So now the Shabbos is a bigger Shabbos because of the Nes that happened on that Shabbos. The Alter Rebbe seems to be saying that the Nes that happened that Shabbos was a Nes Gadol. And that's why it's called Shabbos HaGadol. It's the Shabbos of the big Nes, not a big Shabbos because of a Nes. And we'll soon see that is a significant distinction. So what the Rebbe says is, ultimately, let's get right to the punchline, that the reason that Shabbos HaGadol is not on the 10th of Nisan, which is when it happened on the monthly calendar, is because that day was Misas Miriam, and on Misas Miriam they declared a fast, and so they couldn't have a celebration of the Nes Gadol. They couldn't have it on Yud Nisan. They had to move it to Shabbos. In other words, schedule it for all the Shabbosim to come because it happened on Shabbos, which happened to be Yud Nisan. So the question is, what is the relationship and why does one cancel the other? So what the Rebbe is saying is like this. What is the Nes Gadol? There are Nisim and there are Nisim that are called Gadol, like Nes Gadol Hayasham on the dreidel. What is a big miracle? A big miracle is when Klippa itself surrenders willingly to Kedusha. The Bechayim in Mitzrayim came to the leaders, came to Pare, to their elders, and they said, this is the Ibishta's doing, we got to let them go. And when they refused, the Bechayim actually declared war against Mitzrayim and killed many, many Mitzrayim. So a Nes would be if Yidden waged war with Mitzrayim and succeeded. That would be a miracle like Purim, like Hanukkah. But what happened is the Mitzrayim themselves and the best of them, the Bechayres, they decided to go to war for the Ebishte. And that's called his Hapcha Chsheicha L'Nahedim. When the lowest klippa shows signs of Kedusha, that is a Nes Gadol. So we need to understand a little bit, why is that? You know, we have this concept that Kol HaGvei HaBeYeser Yered L'Mata Yeser, that the Eberstedt expresses himself better in the lower Madrigas than in the higher Eulamis. Why? Because the higher something is, the lower it comes. And what is the Hesber? The Hesber is like this. In Atzilus, or in the higher worlds, in Bria, the Eberstedt is not completely known and revealed. Why? Because there are so many distractions. There are Sviris and Hecholis and Malochim and Neshames. There is so much there that can distract you from the Eberstedt himself. Like the marshal of the king who announced that on a certain day, anyone who wants can come and go straight to the king and ask for whatever they need. So the Chachamim who came were so distracted by all the greatness of the palace and of the gardens and of all the things that come with the palace that they forgot about why they were there. And by the time they woke up to see the king, the day was over and they had never gotten to see the king. But the Ish Poshet, who came running, was not impressed by anything he saw because he didn't appreciate these things. He had no understanding of these things. So if he saw a big minister that everybody else would get excited about, to him it meant nothing. He just said, "Where's the king?" So he is the only one who actually got to see the king and asked the king for what he needs, and the king gave him what he needs. So the same is true in the higher worlds. There are other things. So to some degree, depending on which world it is, to some degree, it distracts from the Eberstedt himself. And the higher the world, the more powerful the distraction is, because there's more there. There's more to be impressed with. But in the lower worlds, there's nothing that distracts you. Like the Rebbe says in the Basi Lagani, what does it mean that Ikev Shechina betachtainim hoisa? At the beginning of creation, before the Chet Eitz Hadas, the Ikev Shechina was betachtainim. How do you see that? There was nothing going on in Tachtainim. There were no mitzvahs, they had Matan Torah, didn't happen, there was no Mishkan. How was the Shechina and Iker Shechina b'tachtainim? So one of the Hesbedim is, because nothing was happening, it was before Matan Torah, it was before Avraham Avinu, it was rather obvious that the whole creation was just for the Eberstedt, because there was nothing else going on. So where there is less going on, there the Eberstedt can be more revealed, because there are no distractions. So the lowest world welcomes the Eberstedt more thoroughly than the higher worlds. That's what the Baal Shem Tov meant, that Ish Poshet is closer to the Eberstedt than the Talmud Chacham, because there are no distractions. So what does it mean? The higher something is, the lower it comes. Kol HaGveya Yeser doesn't mean higher, because that doesn't make any sense. The higher you are, the more you block the Eberstedt. So what does it mean? The higher Madrege expresses itself in the lowest Madrege. It must mean the highest. Kol HaGveya Yeser, the highest Madrege, can't express itself in Madregas. It has to go to where there is nothing. Where is there nothing? In the Eberstedt himself and in the Tachten. Obviously, for opposite reasons. in the Eibishter himself, all the milus disappear. Nothing means anything in the Eibishter's presence. It's just the Eibishter. And on the opposite end, in the lowest world, there's nothing there besides the Eibishter. Not because it's higher than all the Madrigas, but because it doesn't have the Madrigas. So that which is higher than all Madrigas expresses itself in the lowest world where there are no Madrigas. But what that seems to be saying is that the relationship between the highest level and the lowest is because of what's not there. Because of what's not there. There must also be a positive relationship between the highest and the lowest. So why would the highest level express itself in the lowest level in a positive, not in a shlila? What do they have in common? What do they both not have? What do they both have that bring them together? So again, one of the hasbeidim is the Eibishter is a metzius amiti. The Eibishter is. The lowest world feels that it is a metzius amiti. So the lowest levels, the Olam Hazeh HaGashmi, understands what it means to be. In all the other levels, there's a certain amount of bittul. So a malach doesn't understand, what do you mean you are? You're not, the Eibishter is. And so they jump and dance and say, Kodesh, 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 and they expire. They don't know what it means, it is. Like when they found the boots in Gan Eden, after Simchas Torah, they had to ask the Baal Shem Tov, what is this? So what they have in common is the experience of essence, of essential. The Eibishter is. He is because he is. The Gashmi feels that he is just because he is. So two things. First of all, only the Eibishter himself can create a Gashmi. Only the Eibishter can create a being that thinks that it is. Because the Eibishter is. Without any adjectives, without any milus or madregus, or so the lowest level, the ish poshut, it's not only that he doesn't block the Eibishter's existence or the Eibishter's presence. The ish poshut understands, er is v'il er is vos er is. Just like me. I just am what I am. The only difference is that the Eibishter is that way permanently, eternally, the emes, and the lowest madregis are that way because they were created that way. The Eibishter made it that they should not be aware of who their creator is, so they feel that they are their own existence. But when they realize that only the Eibishter is the real existence, then they understand it very well, because for a moment there, they thought that they were the real existence. Whereas a malach will never understand it, because he never had the experience of just being. So that's what it means, that when you take a negative thing and you overcome it and you exchange it for good, that's called eskafia. That's great. but it doesn't compare to his hapcha. When you take the lowest level, which has this potential of recognizing the Eibishter himself, not just goodness or holiness, and when that surrenders to Kedusha, then it is the greatest gilui of the Eibishter himself. So when Mitzrayim says, this is Yad Hashem, then we've not only gotten good, we've gotten better. Better than good. That's the Maila of his Hapcha. So what happened in the Nes Godel? The Nes Godel was that the Bechere Mitzrayim, in their fullest authority, went to war against Mitzrayim in their fullest authority. So they hadn't been replaced, they hadn't been diminished. It was the essence of Klippa recognizing the essence of the Eibishter. And that's the effect that Tshuva has. When you can, the fact that you can turn an Aveda into a mitzvah, in Zochiyes, not just cancel the Aveda, but actually turn it into a positive, into a mitzvah, that is hapcha, is a nes gadol. One of the reasons that it's a nes gadol, aside from the fact that it's megala the Eibishter himself, is that usually we think of a nes as something that violates the laws of nature, supernatural, goes against nature, like Kriyas Yamsuf. What happened to Kriyas Yamsuf? The nature of water was violated. But when the Mitzrim went to war against Mitzrayim, it violated not only the law of nature, it violated the laws of Kedusha, the laws of Torah. The law of Torah that says that Klippa is Klippa and Kedusha is Kedusha, and you can't exchange them. Let's see how he says it here. When you violate even the rules of Kedusha, the rule of Kedusha is that there is klipas neiga that you can elevate, and then there's gimel klipas hatmeis you cannot elevate. So when the gimel klipas hatmeis do get elevated, you're overcoming even a law in Torah, not just the law of nature, which is only a minog anyway. Olam kimin hagei neig. So when you turn darkness into light, that is a nes gadol. So again, how do you turn darkness into light? It's darkness. What are you going to do with it? So we usually think you chase away the darkness. But that doesn't turn it into light. Turning darkness into light is like turning an aveda into a mitzvah, turning the enemy, the mitzri, into your defender. So it's interesting that the Rebbe makes a very strong point concerning turning an aveda into a mitzvah. Zdeinis nasalei kizochiyes. The Rebbe makes a strong point in saying that the aveda itself, which is gimel klipas hatmeis, that will never become good. It can't, because that is essentially anti anti-Eberster. And essence can't change. So the Aveda can never become acceptable. So what does it mean that if you do tshuva me'ava, then zdeinis nasale kezachiyis? What part of the Aveda can become good? If it's gimel klippas hatmeis, ein behem teiv klal, what became good? You can cancel it, destroy it, but how can you make it good? Make what good? That's, I think, the idea that darkness means feeling that I am God. How can you take the feeling that you're God and make that good? Knowing to some degree what it feels like to just be, and you apply that to the Eberstedt exclusively, now you have turned that feeling into holiness. So what part of the Aveda can be salvaged? The feeling that I am everything. But the act of the Aveda itself, the violation, cannot become good. It just has to disappear. Or in different words, in every Aveda, even in Gimel Klippas Atmeis, in order for it to exist, there has to be a Nitzutz of Kedusha. We're told that if it's Gimel Klippas Atmeis, it's Osur Bideach Etzeinim. Why can't you eat Chazal L'Shem Shemayim? Because the Nitzutz of Kedusha that is in the Chazir, you cannot get to. You can't redeem it. You can't ransom it. You can't rescue it from Klippa. It's locked away in the Klippa. And that's why the only thing to do is to destroy it. But there is the power of tshuva, me'ava, that overcomes that restriction. And by doing that kind of a tshuva, you can get to the nitzutz of Kedusha that is in the Klippa. What nitzutz of Kedusha is in Gimel Klippas Atmeis? And Bechal, what do you mean, a nitzutz of Kedusha? What are you talking about? A little spark of holiness blew up in the big bang of Shviras HaKelim, and it ended up in Klippa. What do we mean? How do you say that in English? There is a drop of truth in the Gimel Klippas Atmeis, because no sheker can exist without a little bit of emes. The Rebbe said when they accused the Alter Rebbe of wanting to become king of Israel, there was an element of truth there. They just got it a little off, you know, they missed the target just by a little bit. The Rebbe wanted to make the Eberstedt the king of the world. They misread it a little bit, and it turned out like the Alter Rebbe wanted to be the king of the world. So in every sheker, there has to be a nekudas emes. That nekudas emes, that's the nitzutz. The nitzutz means a potential godliness. What potential godliness is there in Gimel Klippas Atmeis? The sensation, I am God. So when Pare said, Li Yeidi Vani Asisini, I am God, I am my own reality, where is the nitzutz of potential emes and potential kedusha? You know what it means to be God. You just think you're it. Okay, so you're not it. So the Eberstedt is it. But now you've taken that little drop of emes and brought it back to where it belongs. Like the Rambam says about other religions, that the Nekudas HaEmes that keeps them in existence is that they say that Mashiach is coming, or that there is a Mashiach, and that's Emes. And they say there are 10 commandments, and that's Emes. So those little drops of Emes, even though they're mistranslating it and abusing it and misinterpreting it and so on and so forth, but yet that little drop of Emes is what keeps it going. So how do you turn an aveda into a mitzvah? How do you turn the intentional violation of the Eberster's Rotzen into a mitzvah? What does it mean, you intentionally, Yedeya es Rebbeinei u'mechaven limrit bei? What does that mean? It means you know what it means to be Eberster, and you think you're it. Yedeya es Rebbeinei. He knows what it means to be an Eberster. U'mechaven limrit bei, and yet you think you can challenge that, because you're an Eberster. So there's an explanation in Chassidus. What was Pari all about? Pari was a powerful clipper. He wasn't a buffoon. What was the clipper? The Eberster chose the Yidden and told them to make him a dira bitachtonim, in the lowest world. Pari felt, oh, is that what God does? Well, then I'm God. I will take the Eden and I will make them build me a dira, button, from the lowest materials in the land, from mud and straw. So they will make me a dira me tachtenim, because I'm also an Eberster. That was the klipa of Mitzrayim. He thought he was the Eberster. So what potential goodness is there? You know what Eberster means, but you think it's you. So adjust it. Realize who really is the Eberster, and you're ahead of the game because you know what it's like or what it means to be an Eberster. More than a malach. A malach doesn't know. Kodesh, kodesh, kodesh. The Eberster is a total mystery to them. So the Rebbe's conclusion in the Sicha was, the Nes Godel was that the klipa turned into Kedusha. It's hapcha. That is a Nes Godel. So that's why Shabbos HaGodol doesn't mean a great Shabbos, because that's not the point. The point is that a Nes Godol happened. Ishapcha Chshecha L'Nahira. Now we understand the miracle of the rebellion of the Bechere and the Misas Miriam are all the same. They have the same effect and they have the same teichim. Shapcha. Misas Tzadikim is Mechaper, just like the Parah Aduma. The Parah Aduma is Mechaper, is Metahir, the ultimate Tuma. Misas Tzadikim is Mechaper for the ultimate Averis, and turns them into zechuyis. So that's why you don't need both celebrations or both observances, because they're basically saying the same thing. Just like you don't need a shofar on Rosh Hashanah if it's Shabbos, because Shabbos accomplishes what the shofar. So it's redundant. So that's why they moved Shabbos HaGodol from the 10th of Nisan to Shabbos, because you don't need to celebrate both. In other words, celebrating the ness of Shabbos HaGodol on Yud Nissan is unnecessary. Yud Nissan already represents is Hapchach Sheicha L'Nahira. So why not cancel it altogether? If they accomplish the same thing, why have them on separate dates? Just cancel the celebration altogether. So we see that on Rosh Hashanah, Shechal Li is B'Shabbos, you don't blow Shofar because Shabbos accomplishes what Shofar accomplishes. And yet we do say in the davening on Rosh Hashanah, we say Shofres, Malchias, and so on, because they're not exactly the same thing. They're both Ishapcha, but it's a different kind of Ishapcha. And that's why you don't cancel either one of them completely. So in the case of Shabbos HaGodol, they just moved it to Shabbos, because on the 10th of Nisan, you don't need it. And in the case of the Shofar, instead of actually blowing the Shofar, you just read the Psukim of Shofres, because something about the Shofar that Shabbos doesn't cover. And there is something about the Nes Godel that the Misas Tzadikim doesn't cover. So that's the Teichen of the Sicha. Anybody have any questions? Can I even hear the questions? Anyway, Yud Aleph Nissan is coming up. And if the Yartzeit or the Misas Tzadikim can be Peil Yeshua's Bekerev Haoretz, then certainly the birthday should be even more powerful. And it should be Peil Yater Mebechayei, and it should change the world dramatically, because the world is changing dramatically, but it needs to shift to more positive form. So on Yud Aleph Nissan, we should expect some great things. Is Hapchach Sheicha L'Nahira. Somebody's asking, how do we have a good Seder by ourselves? The Rebbe told Ari Halberstam, when he invited him to his house, he invited the Rebbe to his house for the Seder after the Rebbetzin passed away. The Rebbe said, I will not be alone. The Shver will be with me. My father-in-law will be with me. In every Seder, your father in heaven comes to join the Seder. So in addition to Eliyahu coming, like somebody wrote online, don't let him into the house. He's been to so many houses, he's carrying germs, he's carrying viruses. You're not alone at a Seder. And I was thinking maybe, you know, right at the beginning of the Seder, you invite the needy to come join you and partake in the celebration, which is very strange because you're at home already. Who are you inviting? You're making this loud statement, anyone who needs, come on. Nobody's hearing you, you're home. So it could be that who you're inviting is actually the neshamis. Those who need to have a seder means the neshamis who can't physically partake in a seder, can't make a seder. So you're inviting them to participate in your Seder, and be your guest. But certainly your father comes, because when you ask the four questions, you're asking it of your father. And when you say Tate, your father responds, no matter where he is. So you're really not alone. Yeah. Somebody said, it's all very nice. How do you make a Seder? There are so many good sites, Chabad.org and others, where they take you through the steps, step by step, and tell you how to make a Seder. They'll even send you a kit. So it's not that difficult. It's just a simple ordering of things and events. And you can certainly do it. It just feels a little strange being by yourself, talking to yourself, but you're not. You're not by yourself and you're not talking to yourself. Somebody asks, how will the world change for the better if people don't listen? Well, the first thing that's going to change is that people will start listening. And that would be a change for the good. And why will they start listening? Because we're sober. This virus is sobering us up. We're realizing very, very keenly that we don't have many needs. And what we need, we have. That's a sobering thought. And then we can listen. Somebody says, I've had the experience of turning vice into virtue, which is, of course, the power of tshuva. But how can we make sure that we continue on the good path and inspire others to do so? There's your answer. When you're busy inspiring others to do so, you are guaranteed that you will stay on the good path. So don't keep it to yourself. Look around and see who you can inspire. And that will in turn inspire you. So is this whole thing a prelude to Mashiach? Of course it is. Everything's a prelude to Mashiach. But this is a dramatic step forward. A lot of responses. Here's an interesting question. When does the transforming or conversion of unholy into holy, when will that end? Of course, it'll end with the coming of Mashiach. The coming of Mashiach means the most simple, the most essential realization that what is. It's not that we're going to become holier or more spiritual. We're just going to see that what is. It is the most basic, the most fundamental. And when we see what is, we won't become spiritual, we'll become godly. So the coming of Mashiach means all misunderstanding, all misconceptions, all distractions will disappear. And what is, is. It's like, we all know what the MS is. We all know the truth. The truth is, Jews don't work on Shabbos. Jews don't eat non-kosher. That's the truth. But is that the fact? No, it's not. In fact, there are Jews who don't keep Shabbos. Of course, that doesn't make them any less Jewish. But we're claiming that Jews keep Shabbos, don't work on Shabbos. That is emes. And even while in fact there are Jews who do work on Shabbos, there's no contradiction. In emes, in truth, they don't work on Shabbos. In fact, they do work on Shabbos. So truth and fact aren't always the same. In fact, people are very, very bad. Human beings are the worst of all creations. In truth, human beings are basically good, and they're the highest part of creation. So look at how different truth and fact can be. When a miracle happens, the fact joins, merges with the truth. That's what a miracle means. A miracle means what had to happen happened, even though in fact it was not supposed to happen. So what does it mean? A supernatural event is a miracle, and it cancels out the natural order of things. So by nature, people die. In truth, people shouldn't die. Death is unnatural. So when people will stop dying with the coming of Mashiach, you could call it a miracle, or you could say the facts finally match the truth, and they inevitably must. So what's going to happen when Mashiach comes? Every emes, every truth, will also be the fact. God created the world for it to be a dwelling place for him. That will finally become a fact, not only a truth. So the coming of Mashiach is the ultimate transformation of the lowest into the highest. And what does highest mean? God himself. Skip the ladder that stands on earth and reaches into heaven. You won't need a ladder. Heaven will be here. The Eibishter will be here. And you don't need ladders. You don't need levels of holiness, levels of wisdom. You won't need any of it. God will be known. God will be seen. And we will relate to God directly, because only we can do that, since we are the lowest. But we are the most essential. And the goal is that essence of low should merge with essence of high. We're both not interested in levels. Like the Alter Rebbe said, I don't want Gan Eden, I just want you. So we have in common the disinterest in levels, and we also have in common the fact that we experience what it means to just be real. It's been a pleasure. Let's do it again soon. And let's keep learning the Rebbe's Sichas, because it is the most relevant for our times. It tells us exactly where we need to be. if we don't talk before Yom Tov, have a kosher and happy Yom Tov.